This is The Guardian.
Today, supporters of Donald Trump are changing election laws and taking over key posts in US state governments. What's their plan? Remember when it felt like you just couldn't escape Donald Trump?
They used to write nothing about me. Now I average probably about four or five stories a day on the front page.
You should be saying congratulations instead of asking a really snarky question.
And then, in January this year, he was banned from social media and left office. And it suddenly felt like he was just gone. But he didn't vanish. He doesn't get the sort of wall-to-wall media coverage that he enjoyed as a candidate and then as president. And thank God, there's no more tweets. But those rallies, where he'd bask in the love of the crowd and in their hatred of his enemies, they're still happening. The Guardian's Ed Pilkington has been watching them.
Hello, Iowa.
From about the first second, he goes on and on and on about how he lost the 2020 election through a rigged election.
They rigged the election, and now, based on the rigged election, they're destroying our country.
How, essentially, Joe Biden is an imposter and shouldn't be in the White House because Donald Trump should be there having won a beautiful election. It was the greatest election in U.S. history, and he won it commandingly.
Remember, this is not about me being robbed of an election. This is about the American people having their country taken away from them. That's what it's really about.
And so he's kind of like a stuck record. It's like he can't move on from 2020.
We did.
It's a tired message, so boring. He's not going to overturn the 2020 election. But maybe it's not about the 2020 elections.
I think one needs to make a key kind of flip of the brain. Though Donald Trump sounds like a stuck record going on and on about November the 3rd, 2020, everything he says is actually targeted like a laser onto November 2024 and the election that he's hinting he's going to run again in.
Over the past year, it's become increasingly clear that Donald Trump really did try to overturn the election and failed. It's also becoming clear that the former president and his supporters learned from that experience. They know why it didn't work last time. And if he runs again in 3 years, they're going to be ready. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, how Trump's assault on American democracy is just getting started. So we remember what happened after the last US presidential election. Trump declared victory, and then over the next days, as postal votes came in, it became clear he wasn't in fact winning. And within 5 days, the election was called for Joe Biden.
The Fox News decision desk can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden will win Pennsylvania and Nevada, putting him over the 270 electoral votes he needs to become the 46th president of the United States.
Trump, of course, rejected this and called for recounts in some of the states where the votes were closest. And where those recounts happened, they showed that, sure enough, Biden had actually won.
Election officials in the US state of Georgia have confirmed that Joe Biden beat Donald Trump there after a recount. But Mr. Trump still refuses to accept he lost the election, and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has again laid out unsubstantiated claims about voter fraud.
Some wondered if Trump was even going to leave the White House, and a lot of this felt really serious, and a lot of it seemed a bit ridiculous, too.
Some men use hair dye. Look towards the sideburns as Giuliani's hair dye starts to run. It really starts to run.
Until the January 6 attack on the Capitol.
I will not tolerate fake news no more!
And it will stand in recess until the call of the chair.
USA! USA! USA!
Ed Pilkington, you're The Guardian's chief correspondent based in New York. A year on from that contentious election, how close did Trump get to overturning the 2020 result.
What we've learned is that at every level of government, right down to the level of a small electoral board in Detroit, Donald Trump personally called up members of that board to try and convince them not to certify the election result, all the way up to the Vice President, Mike Pence, who hours before the insurrection on January the 6th, he was still trying to browbeat into blocking Biden's victory. So at every level of government, he was supremely active in trying to affect something that had never been seen before in American history, which was a sitting American president trying to hang on and refuse to leave the White House, even though he had lost.
So, as you say, there was a lot more effort than we realized at the time. Ultimately, of course, Trump failed in this effort. Given what we now know about how coordinated their campaign was to overturn the results, what actually prevented Trump from succeeding?
It came down to a bunch of individuals, actually. Some really important individuals just said no. And top of the list of those people are probably Mike Pence, the vice president, who said no, his reading of the US Constitution would not allow him to block a legitimately counted election result.
Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware has received 306 votes.
But also it happened, importantly, at state levels. Georgia was right in the thick of the storm. The Secretary of State there, the top election official, Brad Raffensperger, just refused to go along with Trump's games. Trump famously called him up 4 days before January the 6th and asked him just to find 11,780 votes.
The people of Georgia are angry. The people of the country are angry. And there's nothing wrong with saying that, you know, that you've recalculated.
Well, Mr. President, the challenge that you have is the data you have is wrong.
Look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
And that was the case really for every important individual who was in control of the election certification. They all stood up and said no.
Ed, the origin myth of this movement is something that's been called the big lie, the idea that the election was somehow stolen from Trump. And it didn't die when he left office on January 20. It's something, as you say, he's kept talking about. And the events of January 6 have become really key to it. At the time, top Republicans, including Trump, condemned the insurrection. And there seemed to be a somber, even a sober period that followed.
We will not be kept out of this chamber by thugs, mobs, or threats.
But then, at the most recent round of elections in early November, we saw at least seven people who were actually in Washington to protest that day elected to public office. Ed, it seems like in just a short amount of time, the way January 6 is being remembered and being portrayed on the right has completely transformed.
It didn't take long at all. It was a matter of days and certainly months that many of the leading figures in the Republican Party, both within Congress and at state level, changed their tune and began to sort of, was it that big a deal? Donald Trump wasn't behind it. There was just a few weirdos doing this appalling act. And Donald Trump himself, he's talked about the beautiful people who were out there on that day.
They were there for one reason, the rigged election. They felt the election was rigged. That's why they were there. And they were peaceful people. These were great people.
And he's even gone on to lionize Ashley Babbitt. Now, she was the female protester who was shot dead by a police officer as she tried to break into the speaker's lobby. And at that very time, there were Congress members cowering in the speaker's lobby, fearful that they were going to be attacked and even killed. And he's called her, in a recent video, an incredible person.
There was no reason Ashley should have lost her life that day. We must all demand justice for Ashley and her family.
That shift on Ashley Babbitt on all of this is just incredible, especially when you consider that whenever audits of the election results have been carried out, even by pro-Trump groups, they find that the election was legitimate. Like, there's just no evidence of serious fraud, though I guess one thing we've learned over the past couple of years is that a lack of evidence doesn't stop an idea from gaining currency and becoming really influential in public life. Ed, just how popular is this big lie idea among Americans now?
Remarkably, it's only got stronger, I think. The most recent poll suggested that two-thirds of Republicans believed that Trump had won the 2020 election and should be in the White House today. Now, that's a tiny bit less than other polls recently that showed as many as 78%. So it kind of hovers. And one of the many election and democracy experts I spoke to is Jessica Marsden. Now, she's a lawyer at a group called Protect Democracy, and her specific job is to investigate and explore how you protect the integrity of the two big elections coming up, next year's midterm elections in 2022, and the really big one, which is 2024, which, as I say, Trump is hinting strongly he may run again for that election. And she has a very interesting perspective about what the big lie is all about and about how, at face value, it looks as though we're looking back to the election that happened last November, but how actually it's all about the future.
If you have spent 4 years hearing that the last election was fraudulent, that the people who count the ballots can't be trusted, that the machines don't work, you're going to be much more susceptible in 2024 to believing allegations that that election was somehow fraudulent or rigged, no matter how baseless those claims are. So by continuing to beat that drum nonstop from 2020 to 2024, I think they're really softening the ground for a future effort to interfere with or subvert the election.
All right, so on the ground, what's actually going on? Because one thing that became clear in 2020 was that state officials have huge amounts of responsibility for how elections are run in Michigan or Pennsylvania or Georgia or just their particular state. What do you see happening at that state level that's so worrying?
Now, if you look at Jessica Marsden, who we just heard from, and her group Protect Democracy, they've been tracking what the states have been up to since Election Day last November. And in this last year, they've tracked no fewer than 216 bills in 14 states that have been introduced that in some ways politicize, criminalize, or interfere with the election administration in ways that could distort or, at its worst level, even overturn the outcome of the 2024 presidential election.
Okay, these laws you're talking about are being introduced at the state level, not in Congress, and specifically in those state legislatures where the Republicans have a majority. So tell me about them. How do they work and why are they so sinister?
I want to start by telling you about a law that actually passed, and then I want to tell you about a much more frightening bill that did not pass. The bill that passed was in Georgia, and it was part of a mega voting bill that affected lots of different ways in which elections are conducted. But critically, it removed Brad Raffensperger, and we've talked about him already. He was the Republican. He was one of those key individuals who stood up to Trump and said, no, I'm not going to go out there and find 11,780 extra votes. This new law removes Brad Raffensperger as chair of the State Board of Elections, meaning that he no longer controls how the election is run and counted. Who does? Republican lawmakers from the state legislature.
God, that is just so brazen. I mean, he was so clearly a huge obstacle to Trump winning the last election, and now suddenly his office is no longer in charge.
Right.
So you mentioned there was another law, but this one didn't pass.
So let's remain calm. This bill did not pass. But I think it's really interesting because it tells you what people are thinking. Now, this bill was introduced by a woman called Shawna Bolick, and she is a Republican state representative. So she sits in the Arizona legislature. And the bill she proposed would give lawmakers in the state the right to have a vote to overturn the will of voters. Now, remember, the voters choose who they want for president, and whichever candidate gets the most votes takes all the Electoral College electors in the state of Arizona. So in the last election, 1.7 million Arizonans swung the election by voting for Biden, and Biden won that election after several recounts. Wallach's bill would allow the state legislators to have a simple majority vote. They don't need to give any explanation at all or have any justification for their act. And they could say, no, we're going to put forward Trump electors instead. This is not fantasy stuff. I mean, she didn't get her bill through, But Bolick did last year sign a resolution that came out of the state of Arizona from the legislature that called on Congress to switch Arizona's presidential electors from Biden to Trump. Congress didn't respond, but, you know, she actually tried to do that.
Ed, one thing that amazes me here is that there's so much anger on the right about what they perceive to be a conspiracy to subvert elections. But then, from what you're telling me, there really is a conspiracy, but it's being pushed by those same people on the right.
Yes, I mean, ever since I started going deep into the weeds of this subject, my brain is constantly doing somersaults because you've got this former president crying over and over again, stolen election, and he's crying that in order to try and steal an election. How can you make sense of that? Hmm. It's senseless and unconscionable, but it's what's happening and millions of people are believing it.
You've described this really fierce groundswell of anger and passion, and then alongside it, quite an organized effort to actually reshape the structure of American elections. The people who make up this structure and who don't want to go along with what's happening must be under an extraordinary amount of pressure.
On the ground, in local precincts, at county level, at state level, right across the country, what's happening is hundreds and thousands of impartial professional election officials who work incredibly hard. They make sure elections happen and are free and fair, and no one ever thanks them and no one even thinks about them. But in the last year, they have become the target of this extraordinary hurricane of hatred and hostility.
We'll make the Boston bombings look like child's play at the poll sites in this county. You just effing wait. No one at these places will be spared.
The first email that my wife received, your husband should tell the truth, or your three kids will be fatally shot. Cops can't help you.
I spoke to Katie Hobbs, who is the Secretary of State of Arizona. So she is like Brad Raffensperger in Georgia, his equivalent in Arizona. And she has become the absolute target of constant and relentless attacks and threats through social media and in other forms.
There were armed protesters outside of my house. There certainly have been threats, but I think the overwhelming amount of things coming in have just been more harassing, a lot of vitriol, and it's just been constant for the last 10 months, so it's been pretty taxing.
Secretary of State Katie Hobbs getting protection from Department of Public Safety troopers after reporting death threats. It came a day after an employee of a far-right website chased Hobbs into her Capitol office building. He wanted to grill her about the Senate Republicans' election audit.
What are they accusing you of?
Broadly, stealing the election from Donald Trump. And these folks think I am going to be arrested. They think I belong in Gitmo. They think I deserve to be tried for treason. And they're reminding me of this every single day, you know, without any evidence.
At the most extreme, several state legislatures controlled by the Republicans have introduced laws that actually criminalize aspects of being an election administrator. I think the most sharp example is in Texas, where they did this extraordinary, huge voter suppression bill known as SB1. And in its kind of small print, it says that any election official who distributes mail-in ballots to eligible voters who haven't asked for it can be prosecuted and face felony charges.
I mean, I'm guessing a lot of these folks you're talking about took these jobs thinking they'd be pretty humdrum, low profile. Now they find themselves caught in the crossfire of a really aggressive attempt to undermine democracy. What effect is it having on the people themselves?
Well, we're hearing, it's hard to get actual chapter and verse on this, but we're hearing slightly anecdotally from election experts who monitor this stuff that hundreds, maybe even thousands of election officials across the country are thinking of or actually are quitting their jobs.
I cannot thank the citizens of Scott County enough for their many years of support through my journey in life as Davenport City Council member, a Scott County supervisor, and then the last 14 years as Scott County Auditor and Commissioner of Elections.
Okay, so election officials across the country coming under extraordinary pressure, many of them resigning. Do we know what kinds of people are taking their place?
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit where you couldn't make it up. I mean, what's happening, again, and we're talking about all the same places repeatedly, in places like Georgia, places like Arizona, is that the sort of time-honoured election officials who've been running elections in America by the book for decades are now being challenged, some when they stand for re-election, others because they're stepping aside, by Stop the Stealers. Those are the people who avidly support Trump and follow his big lie that the 2020 election was stolen from him. And so we're seeing people standing in key battleground states which will decide the outcome of the 2024 election. And they're standing notably for the position of Secretary of State, which, as we've discussed, is the top election official in any of the 50 states. Reuters recently did an analysis of this, and they looked at 15 Republican candidates running for the Secretary of State position in five key battleground states, and fully 10 of them were what you might call avid Stop the Stealers. You know, to give an example of what I'm talking about, we've got Katie Hobbs, as we know, the Democratic Secretary of State in Arizona. She's reaching her term limit next year. So vying for her job as a top election official in the really critical state now of Arizona is Shauna Bolick. We've talked about her. She was the architect of that bill that would have allowed lawmakers to subvert the presidential election just by a majority vote. So that's the kind of person we're talking about.
And when we start replacing those election professionals with people who have partisan agendas and are more focused on the outcome than the process, that is dangerous for our democracy.
God, so they're just hollowing out election machinery, stuff that's been in the background, a bit dull, nobody's thought very much about it, and rebuilding it with extreme partisans, people who believe things that have no basis in reality, but know exactly what they want to do next. Ed, what you're describing is a multi-state effort that requires a pretty good understanding of complex election legislation, as well as resources, maybe some experience in running campaigns. Is this something that's being coordinated centrally from, say, Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago, or is it individuals, state-based actors doing their own thing?
Well, I think that's one of the big questions that we don't yet know the answer to. One thing is certain. I mean, Donald Trump is right at the thick of all of this. You know, we just have to listen to him at his rallies. He's actively whipping it up week by week. So on that level alone, yes, it's totally coordinated. It's all in the name of Donald Trump, and it's all in the spirit of the sort of hero worship that he has generated around himself. But there are other hints of a sort of more concerted effort to coordinate this stuff. ProPublica did a very interesting investigation, which they found that Steve Bannon had been using his podcast, The War Room, which is listened to by millions of people, to exhort Republicans at local level to actively inveigle themselves into election administration. Precinct by precinct was Bannon's call.
But if you want to see the salvation of this nation, and this is why the left-wing media is all over this is why they're in meltdown. They understand an empowered citizen is the greatest weapon we have.
Coming up, how to prevent another election challenge by Donald Trump or whoever comes after him. Ed, looking at the Republican success in states like Virginia earlier in November, it seems possible now that the GOP could retake control of Congress in the midterms next year. And we also know that the Supreme Court has a conservative majority and probably will for many years. So it's entirely possible that Trump runs again in a couple of years and he wins legitimately. But if he runs again and doesn't win, he has some of the structures in place that mean he could triumph anyway. So for those of us who find that, understandably, pretty worrying, what's being done to fight it, both by Joe Biden and the Democrats, but also some of these pro-democracy groups that you've been talking with?
Well, I spoke to many of the top election authorities in the country, and they were pretty much all of the same voice, which is that not enough is being done, that the penny hasn't dropped, that people haven't fully taken on board what happened in 2020 or what might happen again in 2024. Many people are focusing on this act called the 1887 Electoral Count Act, and it really is the prime way in which electoral college votes are certified is regulated. And that whole idea of having alternate slates of electors, so sending fake Trump electors to Congress that may then be counted, that's all controlled by the 1887 Electoral Count Act. As it happens, that act is written in a way that is so convoluted and hard to understand and so outdated, literally just in its language, that it leaves a lot of room for ambiguity. And so people are saying, as a matter of real urgency, we've got to get back to that act. We have to update the language. We have to make it crystal clear under what circumstances could alternate slates of electors be sent to Congress and what other circumstances could they not be sent to Congress, so that there is no doubt whatever about this. Because if there's even a tiny, tiny bit of doubt, Donald Trump will exploit it.
Clearly, some of the people involved in this campaign understand that they're subverting democracy, and they think it's worth it to have a leader like Donald Trump in office, or perhaps just too costly to get in his way. But on the other hand, looking at some of those people, the ones who stormed the Capitol on January 6, they're clearly deluded, but you don't get the impression that they're insincere. Like, they seem to really believe that the election was stolen, and viewed in that light, what they're doing might be rational, even heroic. In that way, isn't the heart of all of this the big lie? The fact that we've lost this ability to sort truth from fiction, and in that context, of course, democracy isn't going to work.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you put your finger on the button here. We can't get into the heads of the people who were part of the insurrection, but it does seem clear that many of the people who stormed the Capitol were not extreme, violent white supremacists. They were Trump supporters. They believed what Donald Trump was saying to them. So yes, absolutely at the heart of this is the issue of misinformation and the way that separating out truth from lies is now in itself an impossibly difficult task in which no one has the answers. We're at the beginning of a very, very long struggle to try and regain the ascendancy of truth. And we're seeing the consequences, which are extreme and could very well get much worse before they start to get better.
Hmm. You were the foreign editor for The Guardian for many years, and you oversaw coverage of elections and transitions of power in many places, as well as coverage of American efforts to export its democracy to places like Afghanistan and Iraq. Back then, Americans seemed to believe that their democracy was the gold standard. But what does all of this that you've told us make you now think about that democracy?
Well, yeah, it's one of those moments where you kind of pinch yourself when you report subjects like this, because you've grown up thinking of American democracy as the wonder of the world. You know, it's the wonder of the Enlightenment, the oldest written constitution still in use in the world. And yet I think part of in that is the rub of it all, because I think having been written so long ago, bits of the US Constitution are cranky. You think of the electoral college system itself, very hard to understand, very arcane, and lots of potential there to be exploited. Now, that's all fine in times of prosperity and peace when things are going great. And of course, in America, the richest and most powerful country in the world for many decades, that was the way it was. But in times like now, where people are struggling, where China is snapping at the heels of America, where very big things need to be sorted, like climate change, inequality, and where critically people just cannot agree with each other, those things start to become liabilities. And it's what we're seeing at the moment, that the once vaunted and revered pillars of American democracy are far, far more vulnerable than we ever thought they were.
Ed Pilkington, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Chief Reporter for Guardian US, Ed Pilkington. Many thanks to him. And do check out Ed's fantastic two-part investigation into Trump's plot to steal the presidency, theguardian.com. That is it for today. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef. The sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. Back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.